Rod said he learned a 7. I got that.
7:13.
Yes, 7:13.
I'm sure it's all about Lord Chaitanya, whatever it is.
Yes.
13. Okay. Verse 12. I don't know, 12, I can't, it's too much to read. Okay, we'll try. We're just going to read the translations because there's nothing written on the board, apparently. For this reason, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Teacher, accepts the form of a devotee and accepts Lord Nityananda as his elder brother. So what was the reason for those who were here last week? Why did he accept the form of Lord Chaitanya? Or the form of a devotee. Accepts Lord Nityananda as his elder brother.
Well, this is Lord Chaitanya in 5 features. So he's explaining about the Lord's incarnation as a devotee, as the avatar, as this.
No, but that's not the question. It says, for this reason, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Teacher, accepts the form of a devotee and accepts Lord Nityananda as his elder brother. For what reason?
The internal nature really establishes love.
Yeah.
Because he allows the sakti and distribute.
Yes. Good. Sri Advaita Acharya is Lord Chaitanya's incarnation as a devotee. Therefore, these three tattvas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Goshani are the predominators or masters. Purport. Goshani means Goswami. Person who has full control over the senses and mind is called a Goswami or a Goshani. One who does not have such control is called Godas, or a servant of the senses, and cannot become a spiritual master. A spiritual master who has actually control over his mind and senses is called Goswami. Though the Goswami title has become an hereditary designation for unscrupulous men, actually the title Goshani or Goswami began from Sri Rupa Goswami, who presented himself as an ordinary grihastha and minister in government service, but became Goswami when he was actually elevated by the instruction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Goswami is not a hereditary title, but refers to one's qualifications. When one is highly elevated in spiritual advancement, regardless of where from he comes, he may be called Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and Sri Advaita Goswami Prabhu are natural Goswamis, because they belong to the Vishnu Tattva category. As such, all of them are Prabhus, predominators or masters, and they are sometimes called Chaitanya Goshani, Nityananda Goshani, and Advaita Goshani. Unfortunately, there are so-called descendants who do not have the qualifications of Goswamis, have accepted this title as a hereditary designation or professional degree. This is not in accord with the Shastric injunction. Long Vishnu Braya Krishna Prasthai Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swaminti Namane, Namaste Saraswatunde Ve, Gauravani Bhircharane, Nirvishesha, Srinivadi Paskyatyade Siddhara. Of course, for ourselves, whether we call someone Goswami or we call someone Prabhu. It doesn't, generally, we're not so much concerned with titles. We find sometimes in India, people have 10 names. His Holiness, Vishwamba, you know, I would say Vishwamadava Maharaj, Dasa, Goswami, Mahaseva, and it goes on and on and on. So for us, it seems like the person must be a little puffed up. That's all. He just he needs a little security, so he hopes by expanding his name a few more digits, he might get a little bit more recognition. Parampuja, Vishvambara, exalted 129, Kalidas, whatever. But there is some significance, at least in some people's minds. I remember one time at the airport, one Indian gentleman came up, Christian gentleman, to break up our sales. So he was breaking up a number of sales, telling people that these people are the devil. So finally, the devotee I was distributing with turned to him and said, "You're a mudha." So the man practically his probably exploded right on the spot and ran to the police, brought the police back. The police said, "Yes, what's the problem?" He said, "This man called me a mudha." So the policeman was not very impressed. So he said, "So what?" He said, "You don't understand, he called me a mudha." So the policeman said, "Get lost," and he just walked away. So for this man, being called a mudha was an enormous insult, such that he was willing to go to any length to have this devotee prosecuted by the law for such an insult. But the police had no idea what he was talking about, what a mudha meant, so he just said, "You're crazy, just go away." So similarly, all these names may have some significance to a class of people who understand what it's all about. Just like in India, we find that Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda was trying to establish that anyone can become a Goswami or Goshani from any class if they develop certain qualifications. It wasn't by birth. So for us, it seems quite reasonable because from birth, practically no one has any qualifications. In the Western world, unless you're born in some aristocracy, but officially it's not that. Even being born, maybe if you're born in England as a Prince Charles or someone, it has some significance, but it's considered theoretically just a title. Because when you inherit some, you know, so much billions of dollars or pounds, it's probably a little bit more than a title. But still, people, theoretically, they don't really consider that it's such an important designation. People think that anyone can become a doctor or the president of the United States. That's the dream that's put forward, as if anyone could become you were born in a log cabin and you work hard enough and you're sincere enough, you can become the president of the United States. Of course, it's not true. But people like to believe these fantasies, and at least officially it's put forward. I mean, people don't choose the President of the United States. It's chosen for them. And not, they have to have certain qualifications, and they may not be necessarily Brahminical qualifications either. In any case, in India, this title Goswami, as it says in the Nectar of Instruction, was generally reserved for people who took birth in the Goswami families. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he was trying to dismantle this idea because generally, as with most things in Kali Yuga, the attachment to the title was not so much because of spiritual desire for elevation to higher consciousness, but out of economic desire. Because when you were born in a Goswami family, then you became the head of a temple. You became the inheritor of the temple and the lands and the assets, and then you were supposed to give initiation to so many people, whatever that meant, and they were supposed to give you some donation, and you were supposed to reside over their functions, etc., marriage and whatever other of the samskaras were supposed to be performed by the Goswami family. you were supposed to be the proprietors of the deity in the temple. So there is a big, if you were born as a Goswami, then you inherited so many different assets. Supposedly spiritual, but actually the attachment seemed to be more from the material point of view. So the idea that anyone could become a Goswami was more or less a threat, just like anyone could become a Brahmin, and therefore just by having my birth in a Brahmin family wasn't enough to qualify myself as a Brahmin. I'd actually have to have some other qualifications. And the people who are less qualified could actually come up to the standard that I'm in, and therefore my monopoly over the title would be threatened. Therefore, there was quite a disagreement, such that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada and his followers, when they were circumambulating, they were doing parikrama of Govardhan and other places in Vrindavan, Vrindavan parikrama, then the shopkeepers, inspired by the so-called Goswamis, families in Vrindavan, actually attacked them with bricks and stones and tried to even kill Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. They'd asked the head policeman there if you could accept a bribe, and when we assassinate him, you just turn the other way. Luckily, the chief of police said, well, usually I do accept such bribes, but in the case of great saints, I'm a little reluctant. So he didn't accept it. Anyway, in any case, they were certainly willing even to kill Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada for their own personal reasons. But Prabhupada said ultimately his movement turned out to be successful, and now India has become acceptant that more or less a good number of people, of course there are still their cultural ideas. Well, I remember when we first went to Vrindavan, I only went first in 1974, but before that, the devotees were, no one had much faith that the devotees were actually bona fide. They thought they were just, Prabhupada had just imported some hippies from America to bring them to Vrindavan. They didn't take them as devotees very seriously, and sometimes under certain circumstances, they even attacked the devotees. There was one such attack at Kruragat, I think it was at Kruragat. They were staying at one temple, one house that one of the kings gave the devotees to stay in. In any case, gradually the situation improved, and now we find, for instance, one time there was one of our devotees, her daughter was marrying Sriji's son, a jeweler in Vrindavan. And they were having the program in Mathura, which I didn't go to. Big program in some fancy hotel. So all the devotees went with their saris and dhotis. And when they got there, all these Indian gentlemen, all the respectable Indian gentlemen and ladies, they were all dressed in pants and suits and dresses. And they were having rock music and etc. So obviously, they're no longer attached to these ideas of they have to have all the titles and the spiritual titles, because they couldn't care less about these things anymore. They're just in Vrindavan, you can buy anything there now. And even as one devotee said, even before the movies come out here, they're already in Loy Bazaar. They're already selling them in Loy Bazaar. And for 50 rupees, you can walk across the street from Krishna Balaram Temple and get as many discs of pornography as you want. So that's Vrindavan. Obviously, the residents there are not so much attached to designations anymore. One time, even one of the pujaris, he dressed Banka Bihariji with sunglasses, and he gave him a mobile phone. What's that? Jeans, yeah. Just to bring him up to date. Of course, there was a protest Luckily, not everyone said, hey, that's far out. I wish we could have our deities look so cool. What's that? I think they did remove that pujari. I don't think Krishna was very pleased by the new style he was subjected to. Now if you go to Vrindavan in the spiritual world, you find Krishna with sunglasses and he has a mobile phone because he learns. And himself and Srimati Radharani now dressed in jeans with tie-dye shirts. And instead of herding the cows, they have some robot doing it. And he stays at home taking intoxication. So this is all being introduced into Kali Yuga and to even Vrindavan, what's to speak of the other places. And even we go to Jagannath Puri where they don't accept the Westerners or anyone who's not born in a Hindu family. But obviously their ideas are not very clear. They themselves are eating fish. They have no idea who Lord Jagannath is, so they think, many people think Lord Jagannath is an incarnation of so many things other than Krishna. Therefore, things have become very unclear, and Prabhupada's books are more or less to set the standard of clarifying what actually means what. That Goswami means one who's in charge or control of the senses, one who is actually engaged in Krishna's service, Kanta Srila Rupa Goswami, Vacha Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udrapasta Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yovishahetadira, Sarvam Apimam Prativyam Sashishat. One who can control the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the forces of anger, the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, he's qualified to make disciples all over the world. So, of course, the rest of the nectar of instructions explains about that. We can understand by engaging our senses in Krishna's service, then we come in contact with Krishna, and we in the senses become awakened, and the senses become purified. And that service, of course, means to accept things favorable and to reject things unfavorable, and gradually to develop the proper mood. Well, first of all, the proper understanding that Krishna will maintain us and protect us, then the proper mood, ultimately, that to always be dependent on Krishna, always be, to have the same interests as Krishna, and always be meek and humble. So generally, we try to develop our activities first, then the proper understanding, and then we can eventually work on our mood of devotion. But unless we are willing to be at least submissive enough to work on our first two things, namely to do what we should do and don't do what we're not supposed to do, then where is there any question of actually experiencing or realizing that Krishna is dependable and he will maintain and protect us? Unless we have that understanding, where is there any question of developing the attitude of not having any interest outside of Krishna's interest, and always to realize how wonderful Krishna and everything in relation to Krishna is. Therefore, always feel meek and humble. In any case, these personalities, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Goswami, they're incarnations of the personality of Godhead, and therefore they'll manifest all these different levels of surrender and devotion. And that's all they're going to do. We don't find any deviation from the standard by any of these personalities or any of the Panchatattva or any of the great personalities that are mentioned in these books. And therefore they set the standard for us how we can gradually make progress in devotional service. And although, generally speaking, it's quite simple But there's always the possibility of changing things and making it more complicated, coming up with something new, because people like to be creative. We've come here to the material world to show our creativity, how we can be something special, profit, adoration, and distinction. So distinction is one of them. So if you just follow the same old thing everyone else is following, then you can't be very distinct. You can't stand out. And since we want to be recognized, and if you're recognized as something important and special, then naturally you get adoration and profit. And then you can enjoy all the other things that come along with it. But if we want to become Krishna conscious, factually, then we have to follow the standard and not try to deviate from that standard. And part of that is to accept the simple definitions given and to try to, if we can't follow them ourselves, at least seize things from the standards set in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and other books, so that we don't, when someone else is following their own standard, no matter how much they're glorified by other people who are similarly foolish as they are, we don't become bewildered by that, thinking, yes, everyone else says they're great, so they must be great. Although in the books, they don't seem to indicate that such a standard of life, such a standard of preaching or activity is actually considered very important. So if one is, therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we don't want wealth, women, followers, or even liberation. We just want unalloyed service to Krishna. So if one wants women, wealth, followers, if one wants liberation, if one wants so many different things, then one can try to concoct different systems. I'm sure the Prakriti Sahajiyas in India, they had, some of them had millions of followers. So they went to hell, and they had many people go to hell with them. So they had a lot of company in hell. But they didn't go back to the spiritual world or make sufficient or significant spiritual advancement. Therefore, we have to take Chaitanya Charitamrita, beginning with Bhagavad Gita, but Chaitanya Charitamrita shows us the life of a devotee in Kali Yuga, how the standard is supposed to be, what's supposed to be done. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is simply spreading Krishna consciousness. He's not engaged in mundane welfare work. He's not feeding the poor. He's not trying to do, you know, set up hospitals to help the sick. He's just spreading Krishna consciousness. He doesn't, and that's our standard if we want to, that's what our society is meant for. Of course, we don't say that we're not supposed to feed people, but we feed them prasadam in the path of helping them become Krishna conscious, not just to fill their empty belly so they can come back tomorrow and ask for more. There was one king, he offered that anyone who is in his kingdom, he would give them free room and free food. So they set up a house, and the whole house became filled with people claiming that they're all lazy, and therefore they were getting free food and had a place to live. So the house became overcrowded, and the king's minister told the king, the house is completely crowded now with people claiming that they're lazy. So the king said, we'll just set the house on fire and we'll find out who's actually lazy. So they set the house on fire, the house was burning down, and everyone ran out of the house except for two men. One of them said to the other, my dear sir, your back is on fire. Maybe you should turn over. And the other one said, well, your front is on fire. Maybe you should turn over. So when the king heard that these two people were so lazy, that in spite of the fact that they were on fire, they refused to go anywhere, he said, yes, these people are truly lazy. You should give them free room and board. So similarly, we're not against feeding people, but we feed them prasadam in the hope that they'll make some progress towards spiritual understanding. And that way they can become benefited. One time Prabhupada in one class, he was saying that if you just give people prasad, that will help them. They'll get a chance in the future to get some more prasad. But it doesn't guarantee them anything, even a human form of life. But if they have to understand that this is actually prasadam, this is actually offered to Krishna. Then by that Krishna consciousness, then they get the eligible to get at least another form of human form of life. In other words, our whole objective is to help people become Krishna conscious. There is, sometimes we think everything is, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, all our books sometimes seem a little mystical, but ultimately the mysticism winds up to actually remembering Krishna. Therefore, all these standards are set so we can understand who is actually Krishna conscious, who is actually engaging their senses and mind in Krishna service, and therefore resulting in Krishna consciousness. So we find the standard set by these Goswamis, these three Goswamis mentioned, and the six Goswamis, how they dedicated everything in Krishna service, and therefore they were Krishna conscious. We don't find that they were claiming to be Krishna conscious, although they didn't follow the principles of the Goswamis. Our standard is very strict, and as much as we follow it, then to that extent we become benefit. The worst thing is to think, we don't really have to, I can get the same result without following the actual process. That's called sahajya. And therefore, if enough people agree with me, then it becomes true. And if people object to our system that we've created, which doesn't agree with the teachings of our previous acharyas, they're just envious. Because they ultimately don't really respect the previous acharyas. They have other interests. Therefore, we should be careful that we actually want true benefit and to become Krishna conscious. We can get so many things in this world by following so many other things. Krishna consciousness will not necessarily guarantee us any higher status in society, any greater facility for health or wealth, or any acknowledgement by anyone. All it'll do is guarantee us that we won't take another birth and we'll go back to the spiritual world. So if that doesn't seem very significant to us, then obviously we won't take it very seriously. We'll have some other interests. But if we actually have some faith that it would be nice to get out of our material miseries and to reawaken our original love and awareness of Krishna, then Krishna consciousness seems quite significant, and the standard of becoming Krishna conscious is explained in this literature. And whether or not we're up to the standard or not, that's not the central point. We should find out what the standard is and then make steps to become up to the standard. But if everyone has a different standard, and it's none of them are really based upon this literature, and everyone's free to just experiment with their own standards and see what happens, then it's going to be a long time before we see the spiritual world again. If at all. Kali Yuga is very dangerous. It's not the place to fool around. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes. Why are we trying to avoid the Pujari doing weddings?
Well, no, I'm not saying that the Pujari doing weddings are avoiding that, but the point that I'm making is that it seems to, you know, come to, into that environment. So like we have, the, for example, like the Kaspa Swami, so that this is our temple. He's the, you know,
well, of course, we don't expect the temple president. I don't think most in our temples, the temple presidents, write essays about how the temple actually belongs to them. I think it's more or less understood that, I mean, even legally it doesn't belong to them. And here in Dallas, you've had so many temple presidents, and when they left, they didn't take the temple with them. So it's not exactly the same thing. But a Goswami family, they didn't leave. They consider it legally as their temple.
So that's probably the main point.
Yeah. Yeah, when the temple, there has to be some sense of duty. I'm the temple president. Along with that duty comes a sense of responsibility. They can't say, well, there's something wrong with your finances. Well, you know, you're just attached to my designation as a temple president, but actually I'm not attached at all. Well, go to the treasurer. Well, the treasurer says, well, I'm not really attached either. It's just I do my duty and I'm not attached. You're just attached to my designation as treasurer. Everyone's equally responsible for the finances. No, the treasurer is responsible. Not necessarily. That's not where. Generally, as far as I've read, says at the age of 50 you're supposed to go into the forest, supposed to retire from family life. But the temples in ISKCON is not mundane organization. It's supposed to be attached to serving the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's better than going to the forest. Because the whole idea of going to the forest is simplify your life so you can think about Krishna. So if the services in the temple are actually connected with Krishna and the spreading of Krishna consciousness, and by rendering them we're actually becoming more Krishna conscious, well, that's the purpose of all activity. That's the purpose of the renunciation. Well, that may be some personal way of looking at things.
No, I'm asking that.
Well, anyone, whatever we're doing, even sitting here, I mean, it's not my official position to sit here, but I could have the mentality, I'm just sitting here because, you know, someone told me to do it, or I can do it because I want to please Krishna, my spiritual master. It's a question of awareness and knowledge. For some people, it may be awakened under different circumstances. Or it can be awakened. Some people are just awakened just by proper understanding.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Last night, when you answered, you said in the 50s, someone need to go because it's a spiritual organization. So you can stay at home, you can decide these things. But he's going to be talking about Varnashram.
Oh, some people are talking about Van Ashram. Yeah, so they talk about so many things and no one does anything.
So when the Prabhupada said that 50%
he told maybe one person that. And that's not even recorded.
Okay.
So if it was so important, I don't know why we just tell one person something that the whole movement is supposed to be based on.
Oh, that's the only one person that
didn't tell. It's not recorded anywhere. 50% of my mission. It's not even recorded, what to speak of. Who? Yeah, that's what his mission is based on. I never heard anything. Yeah, he spoke about Vanashram throughout his books, but as far as a mission for ISKCON, he never said it was 50% of our mission. It's obviously we're applying Vanashram according to our necessities, but our mission is preaching. He never said that we were. I mean, Vanashram is there. He mentioned it the last year. But the aim of that is when we're actually powerful enough and we're actually controlling, we can influence mass numbers of people to engage them in Vanashram. And maybe when we have the proper circumstances, we can show the example. But he never said that was 50% of our mission. It's part of our mission under the right circumstances. But if we can't even have our preaching around the world very strong and our organization very clear and strong, and everyone doing their duty in the preaching mission, then Vanashram is not going to help us very much. We don't need more designations. We're not even clear about the designations we already have. We haven't even really figured out what everyone's duty is, what to speak of trying to figure out things that really have very little relevance for our preaching. You go out in the street and tell someone I'm a Brahmin, what do they care? What do we care, actually? Most of us, we're just, you know, a kshatriya. Who's a kshatriya around here? You know, who has a surya teja dhriti daksha yude chapi palayana? It's just a dream. We have no. Prabhupada wanted to create Brahmins and Brahmins to preach Krishna consciousness. And then when we have so many people, we don't know how to organize them, then we may apply the principles of Vanashram. Right now we have hardly anyone serious about Krishna consciousness. What to speak of how to organize them in this world. And then they have all this Vanashram, and as far as I can see, then they spend all their time, they have a farm, they call that Vanashram, and then people don't come to the program. They don't come to the morning and evening program, they don't chant and chant about Krishna. They just live to eat and sleep, and they call that Vanashram. But that's not our mission. So we can help people eat and sleep. Of course, Vanashram ultimately is some farm projects are very nice if there is a strong spiritual program. Because simple living will help us concentrate the mind more on Krishna, if that's what our attention is. But if our intention is just to eat and sleep nicely without Krishna, then we're just wasting our time. So for those who can preach, they should be preaching. And those who have such big families, that rather than stay in the city and waste their time struggling for economic development, better they live more simply so they can have time to hear and chant about Krishna. But that's the focus. Not Vanashram, it's hearing and chanting about Krishna. And if Vanashram can help that, then we accept it to whatever degree is necessary. But it's certainly not 50% of our mission. Our mission is to spread Krishna consciousness. They become Krishna conscious. And if Vanashram somehow or another along the line can be helpful to that, then we accept it. In his dream, he was thinking like that, and then Lord Jagannath came to his. He was thinking mentally like that. He didn't even say anything. He just mentally was thinking. He was criticizing the pujari. So he's a He's an incarnation of, I think, Vrishabhanu.
Yeah,
so what are we going? And then Lord Jagannath came in his dream and slapped him. I mean, and he was in ecstasy. So these are not mundane pastimes. These are completely spiritual activities. Yeah, but anyhow, this is, as I said, it's a spiritual. I mean, for someone, he was thinking about the well-being of Lord Jagannath. Within his mind, he was just thinking, he's Radharani's father eternally, so I don't think this has anything to do with criticizing the pujari. It has something to do with the moods, the rasas in Krishna's lila, or in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila. So just by... His concern was not, you know, anything selfish. It was just for the well-being of Lord Jagannath. But Lord Jagannath, to show him something, he slapped him in his dream. But he was in ecstasy. If Lord Jagannath came in your dream and took his hands and started to slap you, you'd be in ecstasy too. Lord Jagannath doesn't even want to touch us, what to speak of slapping us. So this is just pastime. It's not something... If we saw Lord Jagannath having clothes on that were not appropriate, we might also think maybe they should be done differently. We might even tell the pujari, not that, oh, I better not say anything. Lord Jagannath may come and slap me in my dream. No, he was just thinking of the welfare of Lord Jagannath, that's all. That's his mood. Yes. Oh, and
might be considered low class or
sweet. When I think Shruti Kirti asked Prabhupada that, you know, what's the difference between concoction and innovation? Prabhupada said it takes some intelligence. So that requires an acharya. And in the absence of acharya, we'll probably get it wrong, but that's why Prabhupada has a GVC. So these ideas should be discussed amongst higher authorities. They should come up with the best possible understanding based upon Prabhupada's books they can come up with. But since we don't have an acharya, we may not always get it properly. We may do things that help us forget Krishna rather than help us remember Krishna. We may not, but there's always going to be a need for higher authorities to decide on these adjustments to some extent, because it's an ever-changing circumstances of preaching. Therefore, supposed to have consultations based upon Prabhupada's books and instructions. But sometimes we may not get it right. But then hopefully we learn from experience. Okay, thank you very much. Krantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande Hari Bol.